And it was just, maybe it was like the frustration with losing and like, wow, like why isn't my body like doing what I want it to, you know, like why can't I connect? I just didn't feel connected. I had no like real strength or body awareness at that time.
The season finale of Uncharted Performance is upon us, ladies and gentlemen. We close out season 7 of the show with the multi-talented Ms. Bahak, host of the very successful Airborne Mind podcast and coach at Revival Strength. He's a good friend, someone who has taught me a thing or two about being a coach and a podcast host. Speaking of being a podcast host, he is one that is much better than myself. We find out how Mizbah has accomplished a great deal in what I believe is a relatively short time and the unique characteristics that have enabled him to considerably expand as a person, coach, host, and entrepreneur. Our conversation centers around several main themes, including creativity, exploring, questioning, listening, and coaching. We then learn how Mizbah incorporates these 5 elements into his movement practice, relationships, personal development, and self-expression through conscious and persistent effort while being vulnerable and breaking a few rules along the way. The future is definitely bright for this up-and-coming leader, and I hope you enjoy our conversation. As always, and or if you are new, we are the Lollapalooza / Burning Man of strength training and functional fitness. I am your host, Paul Wenzel. And our goal, as always, is to learn and apply from the best and brightest by dissecting and deconstructing their personal journey and accumulated wealth of knowledge and experience to elevate our performance inside and outside the confines of the gym. When you have a moment, if you enjoy the show, please head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play and kindly leave a rating and review. If you're looking for new equipment for your training and you would like to support the show, the podcast, hit that Rogue Fitness link in the sidebar on unchartedperformance.com. Last but not least, make sure to tag us on Instagram or Twitter whenever you're catching the show and let us know where and how you're enjoying it. With that, enjoy our conversation with Mizbah. We will be back sooner than you think with something special. And at first, in a couple weeks. All right, take care, guys. Bye. Mizbah, welcome to Uncharted Performance. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, man. I appreciate you having me on here.
No, I appreciate, your friendship, your continued support, and the massive amounts of knowledge that you've been passing on with your podcast, Airborne Mind, which we'll get into shortly. But I just want to thank you again for having me on your podcast a while back. It was a fresh experience for me, so thank you for that and everything that you've been doing ever since.
Thanks, man. I'm happy I was able to, get into your story a little bit, and just like it was for you, this is a fresh experience for me as well. I haven't been on this side of the mic too much.
All right, so a few random questions to kind of start off with. So I'm obviously, I follow you on Instagram, and your recent, I think it was a few months ago, it's been a few months, but you're a recent addition to the staff over at Revival Strength, right? At Marcus Phillies Gym.
Yes.
So congrats on that.
Thank you.
We actually gave you a shout out on that episode as well. So this is, this is not a belated congratulations. but you guys rock out topless a lot. Especially you and Marcus. But recently, and you guys have been wearing beanies.
Oh, yeah.
And still going topless. What is up with the new look?
Dude, you know, it's when we're working at the gym, aside from in the office, right, where it's super warm, as soon as you get out, it's a little bit chilly. And so I just got used to keeping my beanie on. And it was the one part of me being an East Coaster that I felt like I brought with me. And aside from that, like, I did keep my shirt on. I will keep it on at certain points, but now it's just become so routine. It's like, it's a little weird when I do have it on.
When is there, a milestone at which the shirt comes off?
You know, there definitely is for, oh wait, do you mean a milestone as in when you reach a certain point athletically or in the session itself?
In the session itself or both. Actually, I didn't think of the first one, but I was thinking more in the session itself.
Yeah, no, that's kind of what I figured. But I see that with Marcus. Like, he'll keep it on sometimes, and then as soon as he's a tiny bit warm, he just rips that thing off. For me, I just, yeah, same thing. As soon as, like, the first 2-3 minutes into my warm-up, it comes off, and I'm ready to roll. I might be shivering a little bit, but, you know, take some commitment.
What is cold or cooler for you guys out there?
Oh, dude, this is something that I have gotten so much – you know, anybody who's from the East Coast is like, oh, it's not cold out there. And like, I get it. It's not 20 degrees, you know, and it's not snowing, but it is chillier in the mornings and in the evenings. And I would say, I want to say like in the 40s maybe. And then midday, sometimes it'll warm up. But dude, it can get a little bit cold. And I mean, I still feel it, even though, you know, I've gotten accustomed to some of the warm weather. But I mean, it's all right, though. It's good for you, right?
Yeah. How far are you guys from the Bay Area, actually?
So we are, like, from San Francisco, about, I'd say, 35 to 45 minutes.
Okay, got it. So it's actually further north than I thought.
Yes.
Yeah,
okay, yes.
Got it. So I'll let you get away with 40 degrees, because it is snowing here today, actually. We had a major snowstorm, I guess, pretty early on. I had, like, 10 inches of snow last night.
Oh, wow.
Here in Cleveland. So, yeah. But I guess 40 is chilly.
Yeah.
But speaking of that, and you just mentioned that you were an East Coast guy. You moved to California recently, right? It was, 6 months to a year?
Yeah, no, about 6 months, I would say. When about mid-May, I had went on vacation with my family to Australia, and I was going to start up an internship at Invictus on June 1st.
Okay.
So my flight actually from Australia was straight to LA, and I just skipped the, you know, connection back to PA and went from LA to San Diego. And the journey kind of began at that point. I didn't know I was moving at that point. It was just kind of like, all right, let's see what happens.
Nice. So what happened?
Well, I mean, I went through the entire, you know, coach's internship process at Invictus.
Okay.
And learned a lot through that experience. I loved San Diego, and quickly I realized that, okay, I'm giving myself about 2.5 months to make something happen. I didn't know exactly what that would be, but I was looking for, I was just kind of following the signs and following, you know, the right steps that my intuition was kind of telling me. And so I was just trying to, you know, grow awareness around the podcast, learn more as a coach and see where it would take me. And, you know, ultimately it brought me here to Revival Strength. And exactly on August 15th is when I made, you know, packed up a rental car in San Diego, drove up to San Rafael and just kind of started my life here.
Okay. That's a pretty major move, because you never went back to PA, did you?
I just went back beginning of November to visit. But yeah. In between that time, I hadn't been back home.
So after the internship, you went straight up to Revival?
Yes.
Basically. All right. So kind of get into some more details and talk me more through, I guess, quote unquote, the process of change. Because I mean, you were a coach back in PA, right?
I was coaching coaching group fitness for about, let's say, 4 to 5 years.
Okay.
And then before that, I was doing personal training. I did some spinning, yoga. Like, I had explored a lot of different facets of fitness.
Yeah.
But for me, it was like, you're right, speaking of change, it got to this point where I felt like, hey, I'm learning through all these people who are coming on the podcast, and I have these, I really cherish a lot of these relationships, but I really believed in the apprenticeship model. right? Like old school, being able to learn under somebody, observe, notice what they're doing. I felt like the learning process, I just could adapt to that much quicker, and I could soak things up like a sponge that way. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I had this idea of, figuring out something, some opportunity within the San Diego area, because hey, San Diego's super nice, and yeah. I knew a couple people there, and so that's when I decided, okay, this could be a great change. I need something that feels to me like it's the next level, mm-hmm. and elevating kind of not only my like coaching game, but really it was. I don't know, man. I wasn't really an adventurer or anything like that before then. So I felt like there was a lot of personal growth that was going to happen along the way as well.
So how do you hook up with Marcus? Because from the moment that you started the internship, you said you had 2.5 months, right?
Yeah.
To figure it out, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you figure that out so you stick, so you don't go back to Pennsylvania?
Well, let me tell you this. So when I left for the internship at Invictus, uh-huh. I had a slight feeling that there may be a chance that I may not come back, and I may find an opportunity. I didn't know what it was, though. You know, I didn't know if it was going to be me staying in San Diego or like really what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. But I did have this gut feeling that was like, I may not come back. So the way that I kind of, I made sure I had my essentials, and it was just like this adventure. And I knew Marcus from having him on the show. Mm-hmm. He was on for episode 17, and since then he's been on like 4 or 5 times.
Yeah.
And they've been wonderful conversations, and we just got along really well from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And it was something I didn't really expect it. It just kind of happened, and I really just enjoyed having conversations with him, learning from him, his outlook on training. He was just somebody I admired. And when I had the opportunity, I was already in California, and even though San Rafael is, 6 to 8 hours away or whatever, I was like, I need to meet him in person and make a trip up there. Once again, it was just one of those things that felt like the right thing to do. And so I did. I went up to San Rafael, and we were doing an episode that we were recording, mm-hmm. but I just kind of hung out for the weekend and had a chance to talk to him. And that's when like the conversation really began around, hey, what would it look like if I was to come here and start coaching?
Okay. Were you looking to apprentice under him or become a coach?
It's a good question. I'm not sure that I guess I see it as the same thing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. For me, it was like, okay, if I was to start, I guess it was really coaching that I was mm-hmm. looking for, okay. but I knew that if I was coaching, I would get that apprenticeship aspect. But here's the crazy thing, right? The level of knowledge and the time that Marcus puts into the development of his coaches, I could never ever have expected that. I just, I didn't have any expectations, but now seeing like how much kind of time he's invested in me and taking the time to like answer questions and really just like help develop me as a coach and hone kind of my weak areas and kind of be that person, it's I'm really kind of appreciative of the entire experience.
Got it. Awesome. So we're gonna bring it back now.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of skipped a part about airborne mind show, right?
Yeah.
So elevator speech. We get on, or no, let's say plane ride, right?
Okay.
We're sitting together. We don't know each other. What do you do?
Ooh, what do I do?
Yeah.
I coach.
Mm-hmm.
I listen to people,
mm-hmm.
I talk, and I love to explore creativity. The Airborne Mind Show is a podcast where I have unfiltered conversations with some very fascinating people. And people always ask me like, oh, what's the Airborne Mind Show about and stuff like that. And I never have a perfect answer. I'm just like, I don't want to say it's all fitness or all nutrition or all health related, because we do go into a lot of different areas. And I just like to explore the way people's minds work. And then try to take pieces of that and apply it to kind of my own endeavors.
Okay. To follow that thread a little bit, I'm going to come back to something in a second, but I actually listened to the episode. What comes to mind, which kind of stands out, is the episode with Maddie Curley. I believe that's her name. And that's way back. But she is, I guess, not like most of the guests that you've had on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why did you pursue that conversation?
This comes back to like my love for branching out of kind of what is the norm, like trying to learn from people in different industries and drawing parallels from that to see like what can I apply, what can I link back to myself. I think that's what creativity is, right? It's like linking patterns. And so I really admire people in the entertainment industry because it's it depends what we're talking about, but people who pursue some type of creative endeavor, some type of art, I realize the hardship, the struggle, the resistance, the adversity that comes to pursue something like that and to even get to, you know, a position where people may recognize your artwork. And so she was somebody that I felt like I could learn from, and I genuinely just wanted to know more about. And she's kind of the first person maybe, as I was kind of growing the show that was in that boat. And since then, there have been others that I've pursued who are like totally out of, you know, the realm of the CrossFit community or weightlifting community or whatever you want to call it.
Got it. If I'm forcing you to, so you're forced. I'm telling you, you have to do this, Mizbah.
Okay.
You have to rank these in order. And these are the four. These are the four that you just mentioned. The coaching, listening, talking, and the creativity. Rank them in importance to you.
Okay. I think creativity comes first. Listening comes second. Coaching third and talking fourth.
Okay. So why did you pick creativity first?
You know, it's something that I, from a very young age, I just admired people who were creative, you know, people who were comedians, people who were writers, comic book artists, like you name it. I just, musicians, I appreciated any type of creative endeavor. And so that's been something that as I've grown, like I've tried to learn more about, and my ears really perk up when anybody discusses their creative process, and I get to understand how people work, how they come up with ideas, what goes into these creative endeavors, right? Like movies, we appreciate really good movies, but what goes into making that, right? And then what goes even behind the scenes of that, what's happening, you know, in these actors' like heads, what happened when they were kind of just coming up, and the struggle that they had to go through to kind of get to where they are, like that entire thing to me feels like a creative journey and a creative process. And I don't know, it's been something that at my essence has fascinated me for as far back as I can remember. And only now, you know, recently have I like validated that, yeah, that's really important to me. I cherish that.
Did you read any comics growing up?
I didn't read too many comic books. What happened was I may have seen, you know, like some superhero comic book, and I did get a book on how to draw comics, like an instructional book on how to do that. And, you know, I messed around with it. I even remember at an early age, like there was that, and there was like writing. I remember I tried to like write a book that I was going to send to like these publishers. I have no idea what it was about. And it was just like, I think I even came across it when I was cleaning out my room before leaving for San Diego, like my writing on loose leaf paper on like the book that I was writing when I was like 8 years old. So comic books, it was just I appreciated it. I don't think I indulged too much in it, but I wanted to know, like, I wanted to do it. You know, I wanted to, like, take a crack at drawing.
Yeah, that was a totally random question. I just, since you said comic books, I used to be a big X-Men head.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, when I was younger. When I first moved to the States, actually, it's one of the ways I actually learned how to speak English was through watching cartoons and then reading X-Men comic books.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. But back to you and segue to you growing up. So I want to hear your story, where you're from, and your family story, your background. Because you, Ms. Bahak is not a name you hear very frequently, right?
Yeah. So I was born in Philadelphia, but my family is from India.
Okay.
And, you know, I have been back, you know, multiple times, and a lot of our, you know, immediate family is still there. But we have a lot of, you know, kind of second cousins, third cousins, like all over the US and whatnot. But, growing up, you know, I guess I would say that I was a bit of an awkward kid, you know, like I was hyper aware of, communication. I was really aware of, like, if I said something, how did that make people feel? How I would really listen, like I would pick up on, I would say weird, like, nuances of communication that sometimes was a gift and sometimes was a curse, but it's something that, really interested me. Like, I always pursued that, all up until now, I still am, on how to communicate better and better and how to feel more confident and expressive while I'm talking and really listening and connecting with people. And yeah, I would say a large portion was just that, you know, feeling awkward, but being this super hyper aware of, like, feelings and emotions and words, and really just kind of wanting to get better at that.
Any reason that you can think of that you were kind of drawn to that or developed that, quote unquote, I guess, superpower to get nerdy with the comic books?
Oh, man, I'm sure there's a ton there. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, something that comes to me right off the top of my head is, like, I just remember the feeling of being in a conversation, like when at the age of like 8 years old, right? Okay. I remember having friends or family friends who were like 3 years or 4 years older. And while everybody wanted to play who was like my age, I didn't want to do that. I just wanted to, like, talk. I wanted to talk with these people who were older, and just, like, I enjoyed conversations. And I enjoyed especially conversations that made me feel more like, you know, that, like, hearty feeling you get of, wow, like, I just feel more connected to that person after that. What a great conversation that was. Maybe it was experiencing that really stuck with me. But I think what also stuck with me was the other end of things, where being in a social situation or being in school and, like, having a tough time, or even if – here's the thing. I felt like maybe I didn't come across as somebody who was, like, awkward and or anything like that. But inside, I felt awkward. Like, I didn't feel like myself. And so it was always this, like, I don't know, this uncomfortable feeling of me trying to be more expressive. And maybe the combination of those two situations were something that contributed to that.
How did you get comfortable?
This was, like, now that I'm thinking about it, a process of several years. Like, so going from, let's say, I don't want to categorize it because I don't know what to compare it to, but let's say there's, like, levels, right? Mm-hmm. Like, level one of me being awkward, level two, level three, level four. Like, to get from level one to level two was, like, oh, that took 3 years of, like, practicing just, you know, things that maybe I would read or learn, or just a conscious effort to, be more expressive, share more of what I'm thinking. Like, just that alone was something that it felt like forever to me. It was like 2 years, 3 years. And then before you know it, it was like, okay, that became ingrained in me and that felt more natural to me. And then it was like another 3 years or 4 years with like another change. And then like all up until now, I mean, I'm happy to say that like now I do feel, I guess, the most confident in kind of, you know, when I'm talking to people and when I'm communicating. But certainly like you've look back 3-4 years ago and I feel like it was a different situation. And then you look another 3-4 years ago, it was like, okay, way different situation. Like it just has been, changes have taken time. And it's required just a conscious effort of wanting that, you know, and like practicing it.
Yeah, it sounds like developing a skill, like
absolutely,
essentially, you know, working on a snatch, right? To make it, I guess, to parallel to something that people might be familiar with, but kind of more metaphorically speaking, it's, you know, developing leadership skills, developing the intangibles to become a better coach, and along those lines. And so I was just kind of trying to draw the parallels out of that and also trying to understand a little bit more what you meant by awkward, an awkward kid. But you wrestled, didn't you?
I did. I wrestled from the age of, I think I was in fourth or fifth grade when my gym teacher told me that I should try out for the wrestling team. His brother was the person who coached, and that made me like so happy. It was like, oh, what? He thinks I should be a wrestler? Like, you don't understand my obsession with WWE at the time. Like, I had all the biographies of all these wrestlers, and like I read up on all of them. I would do whatever I could to watch, like, whatever it was, Monday Night Raw, Wednesday SmackDown, like that whole thing. And so obviously, you know, wrestling as a sport is not the same as what you're doing, you know, in WWE, but it was just, it made me feel like, oh, this is really cool. This is my first, aside from baseball, I did baseball for a year. This is my first activity that I feel like I really kind of want to pursue, right? And so I did, and I did it for about 4 or 5 years. Dude, I was so terrible. Like, I can't even tell you how bad I was, but I really enjoyed doing it.
Okay, so if you're bad at it, but you enjoy it, what other reasons to continue to do it? Because wrestling is not an easy sport by any means. And I am very appreciative because a couple good friends, best friends from high school, were wrestlers. And they kicked my ass when we were just playing around, right?
Yeah.
But just kind of seeing them practice, it's very demanding on the body and the mind. And then competing one-on-one on the mat, it's a totally different animal. I can't compare it. Could be to anything that I've done, because I've never done anything in, you know, individually in such a fashion. So why put yourself through essentially torture? That's what it looked like on the mats for those 5 years.
I think it came back to me like losing every single match. Like, literally, I lost every single match my first year, except for one, and that was like a technical thing that I won on, you know, like the person didn't show up or something like that. And second year was the exact same thing. You know, it was like I won maybe one match or two matches out of, let's say there were 14, I lost 12, won two. Like, and it was just, maybe it was like the frustration with losing and like, wow, like, why isn't my body like doing what I want it to? You know, like, why can't I connect? I just didn't feel connected. I had no like real strength or body awareness at that time. And so I don't know, it just kept me coming back. It also kept me feeling like I was a part of something, you know, like I was a part of this team and this community. And I admired some of the kids who were like state champs and whatnot on the team. Like, I just thought it was really cool. It motivated me to like, you know, you put in some time, maybe you can get good, right? Yeah. And so the third year got a little bit better. Like, I still lost a majority of like my matches, right? Maybe I evened out the plate a little bit. It was like 7-7, 6-6, something like that. And then I think the fourth and fifth year is when things started to kind of click.
Okay.
And that's when, to me, it was like, wow, like that took a really long time, but you know, I kept kind of showing up and things are starting to click now. And I started getting more aggressive. I started really, I guess, having a more of an appreciation for the sport. And I don't know, to me mentally, it was probably a big thing at the time because it was like, dude, you come from losing to like, okay, now we're starting to gain some momentum. We're winning. We're taking people down. Like, it felt good.
Did that, your improvement in wrestling, did that in any way parallel your growing confidence or development in being more comfortable with yourself?
You know, it had to. Now that I'm thinking about it, like, I'm just putting myself back in that situation of being in middle school. Really, that's when this period was when, you know, the majority of, like, my career was during middle school. And it was like, of course, you know, at that time, like, you – maybe it was – I mean, the fact that, like, this was something I wanted and was so connected to – for a little while, and I saw, like, I was in this environment where other people were winning. And so when things started to kind of improve, it was like, for sure, it made me feel like, wow, this is, you know, something more is kind of possible here. If I keep just kind of putting in the time, it's like a little puzzle that I can figure out, you know?
Mm-hmm. Cool. No, because I'm sensing a pattern of persistence. Again, kind of self-torture and resilience. But again, I think a lot of people can learn from that. Does your name have any particular meaning?
Yes, my name, Mizbah, is actually my middle name, right? And Syed is my first name, and that's kind of the first name of all the men in my family. Mm. So everybody has, like, they go by their middle name. And so my middle name, Mizbah, means lantern, like lantern radiating in all directions. I believe Syed means leader, and Mizbah means the lantern radiating in all directions. And then Haq, which is actually how you pronounce, like, my last name, is truth. So leader, truth, lantern, those three things kind of come together there.
That's what a coincidence. And I will let the people listen to the Airborne Mind Show to figure that one out. Because I have been in it, and it actually holds very true. Just like your last name. I mean, all of
thank
them.
You.
Yeah, it's a funny coincidence, but it's pretty awesome. I'm going to jump around. I apologize because I like to free associate, and it sometimes happens. So,
totally fine.
I've heard listening and following you, listening to the show and following you, some interesting projects or challenges or tasks that you have taken on. And the one that you kind of mentioned on early on was memorizing the Quran.
Mm-hmm.
That is not an easy read. Is not a short read. It's not something I would do for fun. You know, any book. Why do that?
This is a good question. Because as I've had, you know, more time to reflect on that since I did it, because 14 and a half years old is when I moved to Canada and I started memorizing the Quran, and I set myself that 2-year window, you know, like, I think average is 3 years to, like, finish it, or 4 years. And there were kids there that were there for 6 or 7. And I was just like, I'm giving myself 2 years and I need to, like, get this done. Mm-hmm. Now, when you think about, like, the why behind all of this, you know, if I'm being honest, I do think I did it for maybe the wrong reasons at the time. You know, it was one of those things where, like, I wanted to do it. It wasn't anything that, like, my family forced me to do or anything like that. But one of my friends who, he was older, you know, by several years, and he was somebody I kind of looked up to. And he had gone to the same school in Canada and had kind of gone through this process, done it in like a year and a half. He came back, and I just, in the community, I guess maybe I saw the, you know, the role that he had as a bit of a leader, and all, but also just like how he wasn't like, at the same time, he was just this normal kid and cool dude to like be around, you know? And so I guess watching that, it was like, oh, like I want to do that, you know? And to be honest with you, like if that is your main reason for going to go memorize the Quran, like I would tell you not to do it. Mm-hmm. Like that is not a good reason, because it's a, you know, it is a bit of a responsibility, and there's been definitely some very, very uncomfortable, painful, challenging moments like after that, after I memorized and after I got into this like limelight type of position within the community that I had really admired, and quickly was like, whoa, this is not what I want, you know? So yeah, I don't know if that's kind of the answer you were looking for, but I do think that I didn't do it with, you know, the right intention or the right reasons, but I definitely got such a learning experience out of that, that I'm so grateful that I did do it. You know, like it comes back to me. Like, I think everything I've done today wouldn't have happened if that one event kind of wasn't there, or maybe I wouldn't have had the type of like, maybe resilience or, you know, like consistency or like discipline, that I had from going through that process alone. So I extracted a lot from that experience. And yeah.
So you learned the entire Quran?
Yes.
Okay. Do you still remember it?
Yeah. Like, it's definitely one of those things where you just asked me to start reading and I probably couldn't, but it's like if I was to review it, like read over it a couple times, you know, I could do it.
Has that helped you develop memory skills at all?
You know, what's funny is I'm pretty sure there's some like research on this, or there's people who are specialized in like memory. I've heard a podcast around this, I think, where there is no like, there's really is no correlation between like being able to be really good at like a memory game or an activity and then it translating to something else. You would think so. But like, I'm really actually, I don't have a great memory outside of that. Like I somehow, you know, could do it for that task, but like, you know, remembering phone numbers or like, I'm just, yeah, overall, now that I think about my memory as a whole, it hasn't translated to that.
Got it. All right. So another random, it's not random. It might sound random to the listeners, but there's a method to my madness. Let's talk about morning pages.
Okay.
Again, what is it? Why do you do it? And how does it help you grow?
Morning pages is kind of a ritual that, I guess, for me, I got into it just to get better at writing and get into the practice of writing. And the idea is you're performing three longhand pages of writing that kind of serves as a brain dump. Like, the idea is you start writing and you don't stop. You know, like you don't get distracted. You just keep going. You dump whatever's kind of in your head out onto paper. And, you know, the first like 30 days, 60 days that you do that, it's going to be repetitive. Like, you'll write about stupid things around you, like, hey, my coffee and this and that, like nothing will make sense. But the idea is over time, like, you get tired of doing that and you might start to ask yourself some harder questions. And there's something about seeing your thoughts on paper, you know, like without editing, without like this filtration process, like unfiltered writing on a paper, there's something to be said about seeing your thoughts like written out in front of you. And I don't know, I enjoyed that process. And over time that evolved, I started using morning pages as a way to like solve problems that I may be working on, like whether that's personal stuff or whether that's like hard questions around, like, I did the fear setting exercise. Have you ever heard about that with like Tim Ferriss? I think it's in, you know, Tribe of Mentors, Tools of Titans. Okay. And before I went out to San Diego, like, I was super scared, right? Like, I was just like, I don't know if like this is, you know, what should I do? Like, why am I feeling this anxiety around it and all this stuff? And so I went through that fear setting exercise, and that was one of those morning pages opportunities where it's like, oh, I get to ask myself this question and really like get deeper. And a lot of times it's repetitive, but I don't know, that process, it was just fun for me. It felt good. And it's something that I've stayed consistent with. The only thing that I would tell you that may have changed is like, it's no longer really in the mornings as much. It's more so like towards nighttime, but the idea still remains the same of being able to like, you know, get writing done, a couple pages mm-hmm. of unfiltered writing done on a daily basis.
Got it. What's the hardest question that you've asked yourself as part of the morning pages?
Ooh.
And it could be more recent too, since I believe you've been doing it for a while. Something that's maybe more recent is the hardest thing you've asked yourself. And if you can't think of it now, we can come back to it. But I'm not going to let you off the hook.
Okay, well, I'm trying to think. Like, the hardest questions probably were that fear-setting exercise. Okay. I can't think of the exact questions that are within that, because mm-hmm. it consists of like, I think four or five, okay. but the way that they're worded, mm-hmm. I believe in asking yourself questions from time to time like that, because it just makes you think a little bit differently. You respond to it differently based on how the question's worded. I don't know, like, I'm sure neurologically there's something like that's happening there, but for me, just from like experience, I know that if I'm asked a good question, the way that you're asking me some really good questions right now, like I'll learn through that process. And I've just, it's something that, look up people who are listening. If you want to look up this exercise, I'm sure it's online somewhere.
Yeah. We'll make it up setting, too.
Yeah. Yeah. And go through it. It's tough stuff to answer. Like, it takes you sitting down and like really kind of being honest with yourself around like, wow, what's scaring me? Where's this anxiety coming from? Like, what is the worst that can happen? You know, things like that.
Got it. So last question before I actually talk about the podcast.
Okay. Is,
you also did a little experiment called the book a day, right?
Mm-hmm.
And correct me if I'm wrong. It was a book a day for 90 days?
It was about, minimum it was supposed to be like 66 days or something like that. Okay. But let me kind of clarify the idea behind a book a day.
Yeah.
Because everybody kind of hears that. They're like, oh, you read an entire book every day. It's like, no, the idea is that you pick one book to read. It can be different. It can be the same. But the idea is to expose yourself to different types of material and different stories and try to make connections from reading mm-hmm. and learn through these books by exposing yourself to something different each day. So yeah, I would say in terms of pages, if we want to kind of count it that way, I did, you know, I don't know, like maybe 40, 60 pages, something like that, where like I did dedicate a lot of time to read a ton every day. Mm-hmm. But a book a day doesn't necessarily mean from front to back. It means kind of going in there and kind of mining for the nugget that you're looking for within any book. And that's where I do feel there's this huge misconception around how people read and this like this pressure that we've put on ourselves that like, oh my gosh, I got to start from the front. I got to end at the back. I got to read the whole thing. Like, how many people do you know who have started books but never finished them? I mean, I'm one of them as well. Yeah. But like, that happens way too much, and it discourages people from actually getting what they wanted out of the book when they purchased it. Like, what did you want to get out of this book? You know, you did the author a favor by purchasing this book. They've gotten kind of what they needed out of this deal. Now it's up to you. Like, what did you actually want? What are you looking for? And don't be so hard on yourself. Like, there's all these rules that I feel like we've created in our heads around how to read. And to me, this process was like, I'm totally going to be selfish with this and find like what is most purposeful for me. What do I want to read? There's total freedom within this like exercise. But yeah, I did it for 67 days, and I did it more than that. I think I got well past 90 days. And wow, it was a pretty crazy like experience when I think about, you know, how maybe I talked, how I thought, and kind of, you know, certain, yeah, some of the thought processes I gained from that little exercise.
You totally disappointed me, man. I thought you were reading a whole book for.
Yeah, I know. Everybody, there's a lot of people that might be disappointed. Like, oh my God, a book a day?
Yeah.
Oh, no, never mind. It's but just 460 pages.
It's great marketing, though, if you think about it, because that obviously catches people's ears and gets people interested in a conversation about that, you know, that kind of project. But 460 pages is still pretty good. And, you know, I used to be one of those people that. I still kind of am. I don't know. Maybe I'm just old-fashioned or kind of stubborn. But where I do pick up a book, it's difficult for me to move on to another one before I finish it. And I usually pick titles that I know I will finish beforehand. So it's kind of more of like a self-fulfilling prophecy when I do. But more often recently, I find myself jumping between titles and still being able to recollect, learn, and apply from multiple inputs, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that first approach that you mentioned. You know, there's no right or wrong with this, is what I'm trying to get at. And, you know, I often find myself like I'm reading and now I listen to most of the books like through Audible, but like I'm listening to multiple books at one time. And the idea behind this is like, you're finding books that, are like becoming your friends over time, right? Like what books would you come back to, when you're dealing with a certain thing or when certain problems arise, like having a resource in your back pocket to go to, like, that's kind of the idea. You build a bookshelf over years where you're like, oh yeah, that Kevin Hart book, like that's something I come back to when I'm feeling like X, you know? And it's like, there's many books in my library that I've like listened to probably 3 to 5 times, you know, and I'll bounce back and forth based off of like what I kind of want to get out of it, you know, what I'm looking for. That really guides, you know, what I'll listen to that day.
All right. So if you could name top 3 resources that you've read or listened to, what would those be?
Top 3 resources that you say I'd rather listen to?
No, that you've read. So like 3 books that you've either read or listened to.
Okay. Well, I think that Kevin Hart's book, I'm always a huge person who kind of recommends his book. I think it's called Life Lessons. I can't make this up. And this was one of my favorite stories. And the crazy part is like, you're going to go through it and be like, wow, did all this really happen to him? Like, he has lived an insane life. And the things that have happened to him, the adversity that he went through to become the comic and the entertainer that he is today, there was a lot there, you know, and we only see the movies that he's in, the glamour on social media and like, you know, the laughs that he, you know, gives us. But like, there's a lot that went into that. And I think going through that story, there's a lot you can learn. There's a lot of parallels you can draw, because the life of a comedian, it's such, you know, the trajectory of what it takes to become a comic that's actually getting paid or able to make a living out of that profession, you know, it's difficult. And there's a lot of things that can be learned from that. So I would say Kevin Hart's book is number one. Number two is a book actually that Nunu Costa from Invictus, he was on my show and he recommended this book. And at first I totally like judged it, right? It was not judged it like right away, but in my head I was like, oh, I don't know, you know, like the title almost like it steered me away a little bit. But he assured me that he's like, you know, it's not what you think. Just like give it a crack and see what happens. Right. And it's called, I believe it's called Conversations with God and Uncommon Dialogue.
Okay.
And for anybody who's, whether you're like, I wouldn't consider myself somebody who's, I wouldn't say I'm religious, but I would say that I'm somewhat spiritual. And if you find yourself looking for something like that, just different perspective, different filter, different lens, that book absolutely blew my mind. And I felt so terrible afterwards that I'm like, wow, I almost didn't read this because of the freaking title, you know? And so since then, though, that's one of those books that I've gone back and forth through like multiple times, 3 to 5 times at least. Mm. And then number three, let's see here. I want to say Lynchpin because I just finished that book by Seth Godin.
Okay.
And it is, it's one of those books that I asked myself, why did it take me so long to get to this one? And maybe it was the title, once again, where it's like, Lynchpin, what the hell does that mean? You know? And I've read a bunch of his other books, and I followed his work for quite some time. But that book specifically, it talks about being an artist, and it really hit home with me. And he, the way he, you know, he has a way with words, and he has a way to kind of help you think. And it's something that, you know, not being an artist limited to just like being a painter or a musician or whatever, but like this can apply to, I think, anybody who does anything. You know, you can treat your work like art, and you can operate as an artist. And I would love to have more people be thinking creatively. It's something that I try to do through the show as well, is you know, through my experience, helping people think more creatively and kind of like an artist. And so my third one would probably be Lynchpin.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that.
I'm
going to head over to the library tomorrow and pick those up. I'm going to try to read all three of them simultaneously. Speaking of a great resource and the show, Airborne Mind Podcast, I think I came across the show because we were members of a particular awesome Facebook group called Wad Nation Warriors. Mm. Mm-hmm. And we have a great mutual friend, Linda Hong.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been a fan of, actually this past week I've been kind of nerding out on all Airborne Mind, catching up on some episodes. So it's every morning, make breakfast and listen to Mizbah and some awesome guests. But you've done, is it around 80 episodes now?
No, we're actually at 70, okay. I think, 70 episodes.
So on the way to 80.
Yeah.
What have you taken away from the podcast?
It has given me the perfect platform for me to talk and to listen, you know, those two things that I really love to do, and also be creative. Like, all those things kind of come together for me on that show. I never thought that it would be a medium like podcasting, but it's something that I got the bug as soon as I kind of entertained the thought of doing the podcast. It's such a fulfilling process for me to have this like unfiltered conversation with somebody. And I've used it as a way almost to document my work in public, where I, you know, it's going to be cool for me to go back, you know, even now to like the first episode and hear myself. And it's like, whoa. And I'm sure you do this too, right? Like, yeah. You're like, whoa, I said that, or I sounded like that. Like, but over time, there's a trajectory and there's growth that has happened within that. And, you know, throughout that time, I've done like improv classes, and I've done voice lessons, and I've done like these different things to improve my specific weaknesses that I thought were weaknesses. And I've tried to test that out continually, and I still do. So, and what I've gotten out of that is really freedom. Freedom to freedom of expression, I would say, and freedom to think, and freedom to speak, and freedom to listen. And I, you know, a podcaster I admire a lot is Joe Rogan, and I love his style and his the format of his show, where it's so unfiltered and it's so like there's no editing, there's no nothing. It's just like, here it is, you know, here's the conversation. This is real. This is how, like, we're going to talk. Like, whatever comes out of this comes out of this. And I really enjoy that freedom and that creativity. That's probably the biggest thing I've gotten out of doing the show.
All right, we're going to start winding down. And usually when you do, you have a series of questions, not necessarily the same ones with each guest. I don't think I'm taking one of yours, but it's a similar one.
Okay.
If money was not an option, I think you know where this is going.
Okay.
What if money was not an option, what would you do?
I would, if money wasn't an obstacle, do you mean? Or like, yeah, if money, you know, wasn't an issue, what would I do?
If you can do anything you want and there is no cost associated with it. Yeah, money doesn't exist. Let's just say that. You can do anything. Okay. There's no cost associated to it.
All right. I just asked you that to buy myself more time. It's see all what good. I did there? No, what comes to mind for me, if money wasn't an issue and I could do anything that I wanted, I think I would love to teach people how to learn. Like, I would love to create my own education system, you know, around how, instead of like the content, giving the content of like what I want people to learn, like information, it's just like figuring out what people's strengths are individually, like what these kids or teens or, you know, maybe they're adults, like what they really love to do, helping them find that, and then helping them create a framework around like, here's what we need to get better at. These are the skills, the micro skills that consist within the skill you want to get better at, and then helping them improve that craft. And if I could help more people like learn and love learning and kind of be in their zone of genius, and like, I don't know, I just feel like the world would be a better place. And to me, like I would go to sleep at night feeling, man, super fulfilled.
All right, beautiful. So what is preventing you from doing that or starting to do that now?
Just
putting you on the spot.
Well, what's preventing me from doing that now? You know, I was just – good thing you just asked me this, because I was kind of thinking about this yesterday. I feel like I am kind of doing that right now. You know, I'm doing it in a – very, you know, different way. And I kind of like the way I'm doing it, where it's not like, oh, this is Mizba's classroom and this is how we're going to do things. It's like, it's more so like these conversations are happening, right? Okay. More dialogue, more conversations on the podcast, and people are learning from them. Like they're having, you know, there's been good feedback, and everybody takes away something different, and I'm able to spark curiosity within people through these conversations. And so I am doing that, I think, to an extent. And the next level of that would be me kind of teaching like a mini course. And that's exactly what's kind of happening fairly soon. We're launching a mini course with a clinical psychologist. And so that is kind of my first step at teaching some of what I really love and what's passionate to me, what I'm passionate about. And who knows where that will lead. You know, I feel like I still have time. And so I'm just like I did 6 months ago, I'm just kind of following the next right step.
Awesome. And I wasn't looking for an answer, but I think you nailed it. Because me personally and selfishly speaking, I have learned a ton from the podcast. And even more so from some of the I think we talked about this in the past, and your solo podcast, when you kind of riff on your own. So if you get a chance, continue doing some more of those. And create that virtual classroom, so to speak.
No, I really appreciate that, man. You're actually the second person today who brought that up for me, like the solo episodes, and pointing kind of back to that. And it's funny because when I did it, and you know, soon after I stopped doing it, like I just thought of it as something like nobody listened to, you know, or like people like never really got. I know there were a couple people who gave me good feedback around it, but it was just something I didn't think many people even noticed. And so to hear like, you know, people actually enjoyed it and got something out of it is very cool. And it's definitely something that, in combination with like a second show per week, is something I'm working on. Okay, and great. Would love to bring people.
Awesome. Yeah. There was a video, on YouTube, it kind of went viral about, I think it's about leadership. And it's a guy at a concert kind of dancing by himself, and kind of, you know, for maybe like a minute or two, and then the second person joins him, and it's after only that second person joined the initial individual that others join in.
Mm.
So it's a kind of interesting and thought-provoking and funny video on what leadership is and what it takes.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just saying, I'm the second guy, you know, on two things now. One was off the record. and now with the podcast. So I think you got a good thing going. So I wouldn't hesitate, man. But with that said, anything else on the horizon for you that you haven't mentioned?
Well, I mentioned a little bit about the mini course, mm-hmm. but I mean, just to kind of give some insight around what it would be, mm-hmm. You've heard me, you know, communication or connection and talking and speaking. This is something I've spent a lot of time kind of refining within myself, and I've tested it out on this like podcasting platform and had some fun with that as well. And then I've also met someone who's a clinical psychologist, and she is a genius with what she does and the way her brain works and what I've learned from her regarding connection and speaking to people and things of that nature. So this is going to be something where it's for coaches who are looking to learn the communication aspect of things when it comes to coaching, right? There's a lot on training, nutrition, mm-hmm. programming, and all that, business principles even, but around simply being able to listen, being able to ask good questions, being able to kind of have empathy, right? And these things that ultimately lead back to, like, you know, client retention, more referrals, like all these things we ideally want as coaches. So yeah, that's kind of the idea, taking some of these skills that I'm really passionate about and she's really passionate about and kind of combining forces to try to help solve a problem in the coaches community.
All right, very cool, very cool. And the most important question is, where can people find you? How can they get in touch with you, and how can they support you?
So www.theairbornemind.com. Yeah, that's weird. I don't think anybody says www anymore. Theairbornemind.com is where you can find all the content, reading lists, like all any crazy stuff there. And then Instagram, I'm pretty active on Instagram, and that's @airbornemind. So you can always DM me there. You can email me info@airbornemind.com or Mizbah@revival-strength.com. And I do my best to, you know, get back to people. I'm really bad at like emails and DMs and all that stuff, but I do my best, and I always love hearing people's thoughts. If you've taken something away from the show or you have questions around anything, don't hesitate to reach out.
Yeah, and give this man a shirt because he's cold.
Yeah.
All right, Mizbah.
Or a beanie.
Either one. You should come up with your own line of of like beanies, but you can only wear without a shirt. Just a thought.
Oh yeah.
Airborne mind
beanies.
I'll
think about that.
Yeah. All right, brother Mizbah, thank you so much, man. I had a wonderful time as always.
Thank you, man. I just want to say, I appreciate your good questions. I think that dialogue and conversation is very important, and it's just much more needed in this world. And so anybody that can do that, anybody that can facilitate a good conversation and asking good questions, I just want you to know it's very fulfilling for me as well to be asked these questions, and I walk away kind of learning more about myself. So thanks for doing that.
Thank you. I learned from the best, man. I learned from the best. All right. Take care, man.
All right. Thank you.
Got it. Another amazing episode in the books, fam. If you enjoyed the episode, please take a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. If you are new to the show, don't be afraid to check out other episodes. And if you dig the content, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. If you ever have any questions, feedback, or you just want to hit us up, please don't hesitate. Email address is contact@unchartedperformance, or you can hit me up directly at powell@unchartedperformance.com. Facebook and Instagram @UnchartedPerformance, and if Twitter is your thing, @ReachUncharted. And give us a follow and tag us to let us know who and where you are. As always, thank you for listening and supporting the podcast, and talk to you next week. Cheers, guys.